This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We've talked about the nursing shortage on our program before, but there's another side to the story that we may not be aware of. Indiana Public Broadcasting's workforce reporter Justin Hicks recently released a feature on how it's been affecting nursing homes. And before we bring him on to talk more about it, we're going to listen to that story.
Monica Cummings is a licensed practical nurse in Elkhart. She says even before COVID, nursing home work was hard and often thankless.
We're not going to work ourselves to death for peanuts anymore. And you know, there are a lot of nurses that have left and said, I don't care how much it pays. I can't do it anymore. And that's sad.
Add COVID challenges to that, and it's easy to see why workers are leaving nursing homes in droves. In Indiana, about 16% of nursing homes report nursing shortages. Nationally, it's about 1 in 4. Many workers like Cummings, who are sticking around, are going to staffing agencies. They offer flexible, short-term contracts and lately pay a lot more. Zena Lowry, another nurse in northern Indiana, says right now she can make roughly $20 an hour more than when she was a nursing home staff member.
We're gaining that power back. We're understanding our worth and knowing our power, and we're negotiating that.
But some nursing home officials say the rising rates they're having to pay staffing agencies amounts to price gouging. Here's Bernie McGinnis, CEO of Majestic Care, a company with long-term care facilities across the Midwest.
To be blunt, I feel taken advantage of. Not even close to a fair market value am I being asked to pay. And that price just is it's unsustainable.
McGinnis says he wants to pay his nurses better and compete with staffing agencies. But he relies on reimbursements from Medicare and Medicaid, which haven't kept up. So he's at a disadvantage.
We've seen our costs go up, you know, 10, 11% each year during this pandemic in a labor standpoint. In some markets, even more. Reimbursement does not go up 10 and 11% a year.
So McGinnis wants lawmakers to step in and do something to control the rising costs. Chris Madden heads the Indianapolis-based staffing agency Networks Connect. He's not opposed to staffing wage regulations, but says that alone won't fix the limited supply and high demand driving up prices.
The villain is COVID. The villain is COVID here, and it's just the silent villain that you can't talk to, you can't reason with, and we are just all, nobody knows what to do.
Madden says staffing agencies have to compete against each other for fewer nurses, demanding bigger paychecks.
Can you blame them? They're just saying, if this is what the market's paying, then I want to get paid that too. They're not holding their care. They're just saying, I want to be compensated for it.
John Bobliss researches economics and geriatric care at Miami University in Ohio. He says the Federal CARES Act money going to nursing homes has helped some weather recent spikes in labor costs. But that's not sustainable.
If this continues on this way, you will see a large number of nursing homes that may have to declare bankruptcy. Or the other option is politically that you have to increase reimbursement, and a lot of states don't want to do that.
A handful of states, including Minnesota and Massachusetts, have passed laws putting wage caps on how much staffing agencies can pay nurses. But in Indiana, we're halfway through the legislative session, and lawmakers haven't discussed any solutions. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
And with us now live is Justin Hicks. And, you know, Justin, something that popped out to me from the feature that we just listened to was the quote, nobody knows what to do. And if these are experts in the field, that's pretty alarming.
Yeah, yeah. And through reporting this piece, I was telling someone about a week ago, I kept having this image in my head of sort of, there's that Spider-Man meme where you have like all the multiple Spider-Men, whatever the plural Spider-Man is, you know, kind of standing and like pointing at each other and everyone's like, you know, yeah. It's kind of what it feels here. I mean, it's a very tangled kind of interesting, complex situation where they're like, I think everyone's motivations are very understandable and very sympathetic, but like, where's the answer? It's probably somewhere in between all these viewpoints.
Right. And hopefully we'll get some clarity today throughout the program. I'm curious how you found out about this story. We've been hearing about nursing shortages, but how did you realize that this was something affecting nursing homes?
Yeah, so particularly the staffing agency kind of piece to this. I actually found out about it because back in December, someone from IHCA, the Indiana Healthcare Association, reached out to me and was kind of just telling me a little bit about some of the legislation that they were looking for here in Indiana's legislative session, which we are currently, you know, at the just a little bit past the halfway mark of. So he was kind of telling me about the things that they were looking for. There's a totally separate issue that they're looking at with the managed long-term care bill that's going through the legislature right now, and another bill that they were kind of hoping to get authored at that point was about this. It was about sort of regulating some of these staffing agencies and saying, listen, you have to cap, you know, how much you're charging nursing homes somewhere. And I will say too, there's a difference between what capping nurses' wages and capping what nursing or capping what staffing agencies can charge nursing homes. It's kind of two different things. That's kind of what they were looking for, a bill on that. That bill has died. It never even got to a committee discussion, but that doesn't mean that the language couldn't come up, somewhere else. So that's how I found out about it. And then kind of just kept pulling the thread and talking to folks from a lot of different perspectives and finding out that it was a very interesting situation.
What was it like trying to get people to talk about this?
Pretty easy, actually. It's not always the case in reporting, but I think really what happens here is so many people care very deeply about this issue. You know, the nursing home administrators who want to provide care and quality care and affordable care, you know, to residents. The nursing homes are really concerned about how sustainable this is going to be for them. So they care deeply. They wanted somebody to kind of tell this story. Nurses care a lot. You know, most of the nurses that I talked to said, we've been trying to tell people for years that, you know, we never felt like we were being paid well. We never felt like we were, you know, being treated the way that we thought we should. And we're glad that kind of people are listening and here's a chance for us to make a little bit more money. And of course staffing agencies, you know, want to come out too and say, listen, like, we feel like this is a supply and demand issue. We feel kind of caught in between a little bit, you know, these nurses who understandably want more money, nursing homes who unfortunately we like to partner with, but unfortunately we have to charge them a little bit more, they say, because we have to make up our costs somewhere when we pay people more.
What did you learn while putting this together? Was there anything that stood out to you?
Yeah. So the biggest thing I learned a lot about was data. When I first started working on this story, I wanted to kind of see if I could quantify exactly how bad is the nursing home staff shortage. So I was looking around and it turns out the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, they collect a ton of data, especially in the pandemic. They have collected so much data. And every single week, nursing homes and I think hospitals as well have to answer hundreds of questions and report those to the federal government. So I found a ton of data and was kind of crunching a lot of numbers to figure out, you know, just how big this nursing home shortage is. And for comparison, in some states, I think the state that has the worst problem with this is Minnesota, where 55% of nursing homes are saying we have a nursing home shortage. Indiana is only about 16%, so it's definitely, you know, not the highest by any means. The national average is about 25%, so 1 in 4. So I learned a lot about that. And I took this data. I spoke with a researcher at the University of Miami in Ohio. His name is John Bobliss. He works with this data all the time. He testifies in a lot of Ohio legislative session stuff. He helped me understand, though, that data that I was looking at, it can be kind of subjective. So when nursing homes say they have a shortage, the way that they answer it is a strict yes or no answer. There's not a lot of, you know, details in there. And so it doesn't always mean that they literally can't get the work done from day to day. And so here's what he told me.
It's important to understand that that's not exactly what it means. You know, it just means that you're saying that I have a perception that there could be an issue.
And Bobliss followed up too, saying, you know, obviously if you're a nursing home, you know, if you're saying, yes, I have a, I, you know, I want some help from the federal government to address this staffing shortage, that, you know, you could also maybe be a little bit worried if later on, for some reason, you get called into court and a lawyer sees you said I had a staffing shortage, or you provided the right amount of care. He was saying that's not what that means. It just means that, you know, I have this perception. I feel like I'm in a bind right now. I don't feel like I'm in a good place. So I might answer yes or no.
Well, we have a couple minutes left here. I want to leave with some solutions. Have you heard from folks what they've come up with to address this?
Yeah, so for solutions, basically, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. The only kind of, and I'll say solutions in quote, because it really depends on who you ask, if this is a solution, I guess. The biggest things I've seen to address this would be in two different states, Minnesota, who again has one of the highest nursing home staff shortages, and Massachusetts. They both have these wage caps on how much, you know, travel nurses or these staffing agency nurses can actually make. It's important, though, that actually caps the amount of money that, like, a worker can make, but doesn't necessarily cap the amount that a staffing agency can charge for that same worker. So, you know, the AHCA, the American Healthcare Association, and the National Centers for Assisted Living, they both said they don't really think that's the answer. They can understand why that might be a, you know, a legislative solution that comes up, but they're not necessarily worried about nurses making more money. They feel like staffing agencies are making too much money. They're making, you know, too much of a cut by increasing those charges. So the answer would probably be somewhere between, you know, what can staffing agencies make? What can nurses make? And then on the other side, what can nursing homes be reimbursed for from Medicare and Medicaid? Because right now, I've heard from nursing homes, they kind of feel like their back is against the wall. A lot of them rely on federal reimbursements to pay their bills. And if those, you know, reimbursement amounts aren't going up fast enough when the market is, they kind of feel like they're the ones left holding the bag at the end of the day. So those are the solutions that have been tried so far. There has been a lot of cries to Congress federally to take a look at this. There hasn't been any kind of legislation from Congress on a federal level. And most of these things will most likely, I would guess, happen on a state level, not a federal level anyways. So it may be a little bit of a mixed bag across the country.
Well, thank you so much, Justin, for joining us and sharing your reporting. Justin Hicks is the workforce reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Coming up, we'll hear more about the situation nursing homes are facing. In the meantime, if you have questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. People in healthcare are leaving the field in large numbers, but some are returning to the job after being offered higher pay. How can healthcare systems and nursing homes in particular keep up with the demand if prices continue to rise? With us now to give us the perspective of what it's like on the ground is Zach Cattell, president of the Indiana Healthcare Association and the Indiana Center for Assisted Living. Thank you for joining us, Zach.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me on today very much. It's a big issue for our state, and really appreciate the opportunity to talk with your audience about it.
So, Zach, then what is it like right now in this moment for those working in nursing homes and assisted living centers?
Yeah, you know, I guess it goes without saying, but I'm here today to say it. It's a very difficult time in long-term care across the board with the available staff that we have and the demands that are made of them. You know, caring for the elderly in Indiana and across the country is an incredibly noble profession, but it's incredibly challenging. Every single person that I know who works in long-term care wants to deliver the highest care possible. And those workers deserve the adequate pay, obviously, to do so, which is what we're talking about today. And it's done in an extremely pressure-filled environment. There is a lot of concern, some appropriate, some not, about the quality of the work that is performed and the resources available to them. So while on the one hand, providing long-term care is extremely rewarding when you're providing hands-on care to the most fragile and elderly amongst us, you're also being criticized constantly by some news outlets and others about the type of care that you're giving. So it's a difficult time with COVID right now in particular, and we continue to try to support our direct care workforce any way we can.
What is, when it comes to the shortage, what are the, I guess, the careers that you're seeing most that are lacking? I guess because we often hear about a nursing shortage, but are there any other staff positions in long-term care that are seeing this drop?
Question. Nursing, obviously, to the point. That's been well talked about. In fact, on your program just a few weeks ago about how to fix the nursing shortage with some of our colleague hospitals here in Indiana. But the pandemic in particular has also put a strain on dietary staff, right? Both those who help serve and help individuals eat their meals, but also the cook staff is short from time to time, and housekeeping as well. Both of those professions and trades, we compete with the hospitality industry over, right? And so as there are some ebbs and flows in the hospitality industry as it has come back from some of the lows in the pandemic, those are also positions that are hard to hire.
You mentioned that you compete with the hospitality industry for candidates for positions. Would the hospitality industry be a place where people would rather go because maybe it pays more and it's not a lot of stress compared to caring for folks?
Well, I don't have wage data for, you know, say a restaurant or a hotel cook or a housekeeper, but those individuals have similar hours in both environments. And at the end of the day, COVID itself was a significant concern, right? Individuals working in environments where individuals have COVID, right? And healthcare environments obviously were places where individuals were being cared for while they had COVID. Individuals, because of burnout, there is obviously concern now about forced vaccination mandates. And also just their abilities to balance their lives, no different than any other work environment. But the long-term care industry in Indiana has lost about 9,000 plus people since the beginning of the pandemic. You know, and a lot of that is obviously because COVID has absolutely had a disproportionate and negative impact to the residents, and it has created quite a bit of fear.
How much has the vaccine mandate affected folks who decided to leave?
Well, we're going to find that out right now. You know, the mandate went into effect on the 14th, just this week. You know, many of our members had already instituted employer mandates last year going into the fall and then wintertime. And in their experience, when they implemented their employer mandate, they lost somewhere between 3, 4 to 8 or 9% of their workforce, just depended on the location, right? There would be more higher vaccinated communities would lose fewer individuals. But if you're in a community, a facilities in a community with a lower vaccination rate or less support for vaccination, generally speaking, you'll see more attrition in those locations. But with the mandate across the board at this point for all facilities, we will find out how that proves out rather in the data over the next 30 to 60 days.
And that mandate, is it for just folks working like nurses, or is it for all staff in these facilities?
It's all staff. All staff who are providing patient care or are with people who provide patient care, both employees and contractors. So really anybody that comes in and out of the facility. There are very few exceptions to that. For example, an emergency plumbing problem, right, where they're not around any staff or any residents, that individual wouldn't have to show proof of vaccination. But that's really the exception. It is a near uniform in application.
We often hear that one of the solutions for the nursing shortage is to get more nurses in the field. Is that something you're seeing happening or a possible solution?
Yeah, we need certainly long-term care, and all healthcare needs more help with training more nurses. I kind of, again, referring to your program a couple of weeks ago, House Bill 1003 that's going through the legislature this session is another effort to try to train more nurses, both in the way that they are licensed, but also in the way that the higher education system functions in order to recruit and attract faculty. and also foreign graduates of nursing programs and recruit them into Indiana, amongst other parts of the country. But we certainly need more than that. There is a growing need for taking a look at what has been successful in other healthcare professions like physicians for loan repayment programs and other tuition reimbursement programs that would help those individuals be tied to a long-term or post-acute profession for a few years post-graduation and in medically underserved areas. Those programs have been successful for a number of years. But ultimately, we need hundreds, if not really actually thousands of more nurses in Indiana in long-term care. And I wouldn't say it was underestimated to say tens of thousands of nurses, frankly, across the state.
I think there's often a connection that the pandemic is the reason for all of this. And I think some of it was happening before, but the pandemic maybe exacerbated it. Do you think part of like the burnout and folks leaving long-term care work has to do with, you know, we heard plenty of stories of long-term care facilities really getting hit hard with COVID versus other places?
Yeah, there's no doubt that the pandemic has made staffing in nursing homes more difficult. The burnout and the burden of caring for individuals with COVID-19 was really, really difficult and continues to be difficult. And if you think about just the impact on the staff when a colleague of theirs gets sick and they're not able to find enough replacements, then the workload increases, right? And having to patch in those staff with whether it be staffing agencies or trying to get a sister facility to loan some staff to you on a short-term basis is very difficult. So that burden and burnout has definitely been felt across the state.
If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. That number again is 866-476-3881. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Zach Cottell, president of the Indiana Healthcare Association and the Indiana Center for Assisted Living, on the droves of folks leaving healthcare or coming back at higher pay and what that is looking like. Zach, speaking of pay, is the return of nurses at higher pay affecting the industry in any way? Is it a good thing? What are your thoughts?
Well, first, there's talking about our employees and the staff who maintain employment. Wages are climbing. We actually have a wage study in the field right now that will give us better data as to what's going on here in the first couple of months of 2022. But even looking at last year's data, wages had been increased 10 to 15% just from the prior years before. And so certainly the need to support our employees and the staff that provide this really necessary care are critically important. When we have shortages, when there are circumstances where burnout has resulted in individuals leaving the profession, we do turn to professional staffing agencies and have had some pretty challenging experiences with some staffing agencies. And I want to be clear that there are some staffing agencies that are great partners that are doing things well for the employee, for their staff, but also for the nursing home or whomever their client is, and are not necessarily the problem. But there have been, unfortunately, a number of bad experiences with staffing agencies who appear to be profiteering off of the pandemic and gouging individual healthcare locations, whether they be nursing facilities or hospitals, with prices that are just simply not sustainable. And it's not just the pricing. The pricing is certainly a concern, not really knowing whether or not what's being charged is actually making it back to the employee, but other issues insofar as not being sent qualified staff, not having licensure or certifications checked, not having really good, frankly, business or billing practices that frustrates, obviously, the business interaction between facilities and nursing homes. And so all of that has been very difficult to deal with.
It sounds like, I mean, I'm wondering if this is a fair comparison, but it, as you said, some folks may be taking advantage of the pandemic with price gouging. Is that kind of like all these pop-up COVID testing sites where it's like someone knows that they can just start a business fly by night versus somebody who's been in the business for a while?
Yeah, I mean, that could be a similar comparison. We have checked with our Department of Revenue, which is the government agency with which staffing agencies are supposed to register. We have found a couple of instances of agencies who are not registered with the department. They're supposed to register, pay a nominal licensure fee, and then file with the department the rates that they're going to charge. And we've found circumstances of unregistered staffing agencies or rate schedules that haven't been updated. And so it is a dynamic environment and one that is not very well regulated, so that both the businesses who are paying for those fees, nursing homes, hospitals, et cetera, understand that they're being overseen appropriately, but ultimately the government, in nursing homes in particular, the government is the payer for about 80 to 85% of the patients. And so at the end of the day, a lot of the costs that we're seeing and incurring are going to be passed on to the government and ultimately to the taxpayer. Not 100% of it. I won't go into the minutiae of how reimbursements work, but a great amount of the overcharging that's taking place is ultimately going to be borne by the government.
Not just nursing or healthcare, but in many jobs overall, people are looking for better pay, more work-life balance, and they don't want the grind of working long shifts and being told, you know, they should be grateful. How can you convince folks to come back to work when they can find another opportunity that meets their needs?
Yeah, it's a difficult situation for sure. And, you know, working in healthcare requires not just a short-term view. And we know that certainly being able to recruit and create a culture in which folks want to work and want to serve, particularly in nursing facilities, is a challenge. So we have members who are really pulling out all the stops possible and providing increased, obviously I talked about increased wages, more bonus opportunities relative to perfect attendance, more training and advancement opportunities, even paying for housing stipends in certain markets. We're seeing some of our members be pretty creative with partnering with local housing partners to reduce that cost for their employees. But ultimately, it comes down to leadership at the buildings themselves as well, and making sure that those individuals feel valued and connected to the care that they're providing and how that's important to the community in which they live. It's definitely a difficult environment to do that when COVID continues to be such a burden in our state and our country.
Earlier, you mentioned some staffing agencies may be charging prices that aren't going on to the employee necessarily, but the staffing agency may be pocketing it. What would you do if you didn't have a staffing agency to supply employees?
That's one of the things we've talked about as a potential issue with any kind of legislative effort is, do you drive away the good ones, right? Do you drive away those who are able to partner with you in a above board way? And so as we sought legislative change this session, we weren't going with a price cap approach for an individual wage earner, so to speak, like Minnesota or Massachusetts had done. We were looking at trying to put a limiter on how much those prices could grow overall so that it was tied to fair market value or a multiplier of fair market value. But the legislation also was attempting to put in more transparency relative to regulation, putting in place a complaint process so that issues could be investigated, and making sure that staffing agencies who are having a hard time complying with their contractual obligations of, again, making sure that their individuals are licensed and certified, that they've got background checks, that they're billing on time, that they're doing the things that they said they would do, make sure that there is oversight if they fail to do those things. So we were looking at it a little bit differently than what Justin related earlier relative to Massachusetts and Minnesota's approaches.
One thing that I'm wondering is if somebody chooses to go through a staffing agency to find them a position and higher pay. I mean, I'm assuming they're getting more pay than what they would have outside of that, which is why they're returning. Do you think any employees don't realize that maybe they could have been paid even more, but that's not going to them?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know that. I like you, presume that they are getting a higher wage through the staffing agency, but they're probably not getting benefits. And maybe some agencies provide that, but the benefits aren't there. And many of our members do provide benefits if the individuals would like to take them. But ultimately, this is a short-term versus a long-term game, right? The ability to afford 2, 3, 4x what was being paid before is not sustainable. This will cripple healthcare providers over the long term. We're lucky to have had COVID relief from the federal and state governments in order to help through this pandemic. But the sustainability of wage rates, staffing wage rates in particular as they are, doesn't exist. And so we will see impact eventually of nursing homes who are in the red. And we have, I would have to say here on the radio, anecdotal information, because we can't share specific information of company financials, but companies are spending millions of dollars they don't have on staff right now because of relief dollars that are available. That won't be sustainable forever.
Right. And I'm wondering about next year at this time, you know, what are we going to be looking at? We have about 30 seconds left if you have any thoughts.
Well, we're hoping that COVID subsides, right? I think we're all waiting for that. Here's my get vaccinated, everybody. It works. Nursing home residents are proof of that, as are our staff. And we hope that because the pandemic gets under better control, that we can have a return to a bit more normal life within long-term care facilities where residents and families can connect much more seamlessly than they are now. But to get back to some normal practices that make it a better environment to work in.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Zach Cattell, president of the Indiana Healthcare Association and the Indiana Center for Assisted Living. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. When hospitals and nursing homes can't find people to fill nursing positions, they may turn to a medical staffing agency. With us now to tell us more about how medical staffing fits into the equation is Jason Meyer, founder of Medical Staffing Consultants, based in New York, I believe. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So I'm sure you heard our previous guests, and I think now I'd like to hear from your perspective as someone who has a medical staffing agency. But first, let's talk about your involvement in this industry. How long have you been a part of it, and what exactly do you do?
Yes, actually, I've been involved in the industry for about 36 years or more. I worked for other people, and then I owned two agencies in New York in the 80s and 90s. And actually, in 2003, excuse my voice, I have a little bit of a cold, I started a consulting company, and we're the only company of its type, where we actually help entrepreneurs and companies in the medical field, home care agencies, or anybody else, on how to start, operate, and grow a medical staffing company. So we have a complete solution for them to service the industry. So we've done about 250 of these types of offices with comprehensive services to service the long-term care market, hospitals, some 80 other positions in the allied health field, travel nursing and allied, some 60 other client types that we teach as well. So we're very familiar with this market. And one of the things that I can really tell you is this is not a new issue, and it's not an issue specific to Indiana. This is a national shortage that began over 40 years ago. This is a multi-billion dollar industry with both regional, you know, with a compilation of both regional for-profit as well as mom and pop and small local independent agencies, you know, as well as national companies that are on the public exchange, you know, that are huge, that are providing services throughout the country to all these client types. The shortages, I think a little bit of an overview of where these shortages have come from and why it has been exacerbated by the pandemic might be a little bit helpful. One is there are a number of drivers of this industry that are just been exacerbated, but they have always been here by the pandemic. One of them is the average age of all healthcare professionals, including nurses. And by defining nurses in the long-term care market, it may be helpful to realize that this is not just registered nurses who tend to work as supervisors on staff for long-term care facilities, but there's a shortage of them as well. So they are using agencies more for those positions. But the larger amount of people that are used by agencies, by long-term care facilities, actually are two lower level positions who do more of the actual hands-on work as opposed to the supervision. And that's where the greater shortages are and the need for more people. And that's with licensed practical nurses or licensed vocational nurses, depending on the state licensing in particular states. It's really very much the same position. And certified nursing assistants, and there are a couple of other positions as well, like certified medical techs or medication techs, you know, to a lesser degree. So the shortage has really started back a number of years ago, partly as a result of number one, there's a large amount of probably the baby boomers is the second largest part of the population. Those people are living longer because of better medicine. So that's increased demand. Those people are all going to nursing homes and to other potential client types that are being serviced by medical staffing agencies. In addition, the Obama plan is some 40 million people who have access to the complete healthcare system. And some of those people who are elderly are now in the nursing home sector. So I'll try to contain my remarks to this sector for now. In addition, what's happened is the educational system, which somebody talked about, has been a major problem, which I'll talk about in a minute, but also the retirement has been a problem. In that 1.5 out of 3 of all healthcare workers, which includes nurses, LPNs, CNAs, are retiring because they're baby boom generation. So ones that have worked either for agencies throughout their career or partially through agencies or have worked in staff positions in long-term care are aging out of the system and they're retiring and they're not being replaced. So here's part of what the kicker is in the educational system. And this has been a consistent problem. There aren't enough instructors to meet the demand of applicants for nursing schools. So nursing schools are mostly for-profit for-profit entities that are looking to make a profit and provide people. So it's not uncommon to hear about academic institutions that can get 2,000-3,000 applications for an opening class and be able to take 40 people. Many of the people are short and need remediation in math and sciences, which is pretty tough to get through for some people. And the reason there's a shortage is they can also open, only have a very small class and can't pump out enough people. In addition, yeah, is that there aren't enough instructors. So the instructors, because they're educators, are not paid very well. Many of them are adjunct. They work out in the community for either facilities or they work for agencies, and they do this part-time as a way of giving back, and they're not paid very well. So unless people have a special calling for academia, there's such a shortage of nurses who are actually the professors or the teachers in nursing schools that they just can't accommodate enough new applicants. That's a major, major problem.
Right. And I think that's something that we've discussed in the past on our show. And it's interesting to hear that that's still ongoing. I would say, though, that there's an argument, though, when it comes to staffing companies that and we kind of heard that a little bit earlier, that they're preying on the desperation of folks who need healthcare workers. What are your thoughts?
Okay, let's talk about that. There certainly are some agencies out there that are doing some price gouging. I think there, we've seen, you know, in the last, since the pandemic, a bunch of agencies that are just cropping up with people who really don't know what they're doing, but they're price gouging. In many cases, they're also breaking all kinds of laws with the Internal Revenue Service, with workers' compensation, because they don't have coverage for the people that don't have malpractice insurance, and the facilities should be checking these documents to make sure, you know, that in fact this isn't happening. Most facilities will, if they know this, they won't do business with them unless they're really desperate. And these people are breaking Department of Labor laws, both state and federal, and they're running these people as independent contractors. Well, there's no payroll taxes taken out, there's no workers' compensation taken out. There's no time and a half. And as a result, these people can be paid more money. And as a result, they can reduce the rate slightly to the facility or even price gouge and really kind of clean up. There are some agencies that are doing it that have been around the business for a long time that are taking advantage. I still think the most important issue is that most agencies that are good should be doing full credentialing on their people in terms of quality assurance. Right? There is an issue at the lower level with LPNs and CNAs who tend to be less reliable than registered nurses, and will go from agency to agency. And often when an agency hires them, they don't know whether or not these people, even with references and a full, a full personnel file and due diligence according to the Department of Health regulations, which every state has for nursing homes, and some nursing homes also belong voluntarily to something called the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations. It even has larger requirements. But what's happening is some of the agencies are so desperate for people, they're not asking the agencies to send all the paperwork over to really prove that due diligence has been done on these people. And some of the agencies are not volunteering it either. They're just hoping they have it in their file in case the Department of Health walks in, which they will once a year, just unannounced, or if there's a patient complaint, and then they find out that somebody didn't have a background check, somebody's license has been, has been suspended for drug use, or all kinds of things. So that is a problem, potential problem, because of the urgency of needing people.
Is this something? I'm curious. Is this something that you've seen prior to the pandemic, or has the pandemic worsened it?
It's happened prior to, but people had more time in those days because the shortages weren't as severe. Now, because it's so severe and they're so desperate for staff, that they're just not enough people to really check these agencies. And some of the agencies are paying a little fast and loose, and so with some of the facilities. You know, they're just saying, well, I'm assuming you have almost everything. Just send us one or two things, and if Department of Health walks in, we'll ask you for that stuff. At a later point, and then the agencies don't really have it and don't follow up with their employees, and then there could be a problem. In terms of the pricing, let's talk about that for a minute. Approximately, the stats are something like 20% of the people that the frontline people, which includes RNs, LPNs, and CNAs who have worked in, let's talk about the nursing home market, long-term care market, have left the field since the beginning of the first wave. They've gotten PTSD. They've seen people die, patients die. There weren't adequate masks and protection for these people. There weren't adequate, vaccines were not available. There weren't adequate protective equipment. They've seen colleagues die. They've gotten COVID themselves. They've seen problems in their own family with people getting sick. School has been in and out, and many of these people don't have childcare. Especially to lower level employees like LPNs and CNAs. So they don't know whether or not one day it's going to be remote and they've got to stay home, or the next day they have to, it's going to be in class. And this has caused havoc. And some people have just had it. They just said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I mean, there's, Walmart and other places paying $15 an hour or $16 an hour or more, or some other places. And they've just left. So the shortage has really been significant since then.
Yeah. Well, we have a listener voicemail from Max who has a question about paying workers and cutting out the middleman. Let's take a listen.
Sure. Hello, my first name is Max, and I came in on the middle of this program, but I can't help but wondering why, if nursing homes can pay staffing agencies more money, and I know that's not sustainable, I understand that, but why can't they just pay their regulars people more money and cut out the middlemen? I don't understand the concept, but thanks for listening to me. Thank you.
Yeah. The reason this has been a multi-billion dollar business for many years is that, unfortunately, long-term care facilities into a secondary degree hospitals, who will have don't have a really in-depth recruitment department. They may have a few nurse recruiters for full-time positions for people who do like working on staff with a full benefits package, which could include another 25% above their base salary for people who want that kind of assignment. But it's a different kind of animal. Excuse me. It's a different kind of person who wants that kind of assignment. And they tend to be a little bit better at finding those people. But more, the industry has gotten much larger, and more people switching over to agencies because they're making much more money. They have a lot more freedom. They can pick the shifts they want because this is a 24/7 business, 7 days a week. They also are going to get paid weekly as opposed to every other week. They, in fact, the good agencies to answer do provide some kind of benefits. So our clients, for instance, are able to provide health insurance. They're not paying for it initially, but they do get it at group rates initially. And then they can get reimbursed based on the number of hours that they work or the amount of profit. They can get sign-on bonuses where they, after they've worked a certain number of hours, referral bonuses. They can get vacation pay after a certain number of hours. And there's a host of other benefits, so prorated benefits. So although the benefits aren't as good, they're making so much more money anyway. These are ways to entice people to work for the agency and continue to work for that agency versus other ones that don't have those perks and don't have those benefits. The other reason why facilities can't pay more is they're just not good at recruiting. To run a recruitment agency is not the same as just, you know, they tend to be somewhat bureaucratic. So they'll put an ad maybe in Indeed, which is what agencies do as well. And then they're so take too long to respond to the person. In this kind of market, you've got to respond the same day. There's multiple agencies and people looking for the same smaller pool of people. And then once they do respond, it's a difficulty for them directly to pay these people more money than what they're paying their current staff members, even though the staff members are getting an additional 25% in a benefits package, which is, you know, kind of nebulous. Initials don't look at that, you know, when they're staff people. They look at what their hourly rate is. And because it causes internal problems, if they can't fill an order, and this happens, obviously, when there's unionized places, although there's less of those around, especially. So what happens is even if they do contact them, their HR department can take 2-3 weeks or longer to process all the credentials and paperwork that they're supposed to have in order to get them registered properly and credentialed properly to meet their requirements. By that time, the nurse says, forget about it. I can go to a million agencies or sign up with one that's going to give me, or two that's going to give me a choice of assignments. I do my paperwork once. There's stuff I need to update, but they have it in a software system, which they'll let me know about. I don't need to wait in order to do this. One of my potential solutions is, and I'm not the only one who's potentially thought about this, is that if agencies wanted to spend the money or pull together in a long-term care facility and start to put together their own agency, in order to meet their own needs first, but they need to really know how to run this agency. It's not just having a recruiter, you know, and responding to ads, putting a few ads out there. You know, the recruiters aren't incentivized well at facilities. There's a lot of moving parts in this industry. So if you really want to be competitive with the agency, you have to set up an agency that's really using best practices to meet your own needs and first, the needs of a group of facilities who could band together to do this as an outside agency. And then any overflow, they can sell, you know, other nurses to other facilities that are not part of this network as a profit center to make money. There are some hospitals that are doing what are called nurse float pools, which are somewhat successful, but they keep a list of people they could call at the last minute. You know, and that's worked somewhat, but it's not a total solution, right? So that people wonder, how do these agencies get these people in so quickly? And even they're not completely successful, but why do we need to rely on them so much? Because they're better at it than we are. And one of the other issues I want to make is, this is not pointing fingers, okay? But from the agency's perspective, long-term care facilities do not understand the costs involved of a good agency to run. So they need to have internal staff. Credentialing takes a long time. Advertising is very expensive to find people, right. And there's 10, 15 other techniques.
They also sounds like there's a lot of different elements.
Finance their payroll. The facilities don't pay them for 60 days, and they have to pay those people in one week.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Jason Meyer, founder of Medical Staffing Consultants. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.